half of our respondent pool, I'm sorry, 60% of our respondent pool has tried at least half of them. Or hold on, let me try that again. 80% of our respondent pool has tried at least half of the initiatives that we're asking about.
I was just going to be quiet and see if Brad went up to 90%.
Welcome to The Geek in Review, a podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. Well, Marlene, we have some fun this week with a couple of guests. We have Beatrice Saravello and Brad Blickstein from Barrett's and Brunel, and they're going to talk about one of their new surveys, the first of a two-part survey. And we had some real fun because they based...
We were very innovative, yeah, right?
Absolutely. So they based the survey on the movie Field of Dreams and talk about the adoption of innovation, whether it's technology or process improvement, at law firms. And so
So you may hear a few new voices.
One may sound just like Kevin Costner.
So stick around for that. But now let's get to this week's Information Inspirations.
We're going to do something a little bit different this week for our Information Inspiration. In a couple of weeks, you and I are going to be basically co-hosting, I would say, a conference that HBR is putting on for the law library community. So I brought in Colleen Cable from HBR, and we had forgotten that Colleen and I basically had worked together. She was the Tulsa County law librarian, and I was the law librarian for the Oklahoma Supreme Court back in the 90s and early 2000s. And so we reminisced briefly about that, but then we talked more about the upcoming Lynx conference that HBR is putting on. So we'll get to that first, and then when that's finished, we'll get right into the interview with Brad and Beatrice. I brought in an old friend of mine, Colleen Cable, who's the director at HBR Consulting. And we were talking just before we jumped off that somehow or another, I forgot that back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, you and I worked together in Oklahoma. You were the Tulsa law librarian.
Right.
And I was the library director for the Oklahoma Supreme Court. So I had like 75 counties, and you, Tulsa, and Vinita had Oklahoma
we
County.
One.
And so, but we're not going to talk about old times. We're going to talk about something that's coming up, which is HBR is working, and the Three Geeks are helping sponsor the upcoming Lynx conference. So let's talk about it. Why is HBR coming up with this Lynx conference? What's it about?
Thanks, Greg. And yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And also thank you for being a part of Lynx, which is the HBR's Legal Information and Knowledge Services Conference. Really, the why is I've been at HBR now almost 3 years, and just the depth of knowledge, I think that, and market intelligence that, you know, I know that HBR has in the legal space and particularly in law firms. So that depth of knowledge and background and history, a natural extension of that is to the research and information solutions or library space, and how can we leverage that? So really looking to address some of the challenges that are faced by law firm library leadership through that relationships and depth of market intelligence with law firm leadership. And I'm really excited about the opportunities. This is going to be our first year, as you mentioned. So we're doing a little sort of test conference to begin with. It's a half a day. So it starts at 1 o'clock Eastern time on October the 14th. We only have three sessions this first year, but you know, we're looking for feedback from the attendees, and we'll be doing some surveying during the event to just make sure that if we decide to do more, you know, understanding what's desired as far as topics and length and dates and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds good. Well, I know the first session is the leadership view into 2022.
Yeah.
Please let us be at least most of the way out of this pandemic by then.
I know.
So what are you going to cover in the first session?
Yeah. Well, let me give you a little background on that, Greg, because I don't know if you remember this, and I was looking up to try to see. So the very first PLL IP summit that I went to, which was the first one, someone from the, and I'm going to say this name wrong, so, you know, the Zenghauser Group, which is another, is a consulting firm for law firm leaders. I think it was Peter Zenghauser, had a presentation, and I was just mesmerized. I could not take notes fast enough. He was really presenting just as he would to a group of law firm leaders. It was not library focused at all. It was focused on what's going on in the industry. What are things that, you know, the C-levels need to be aware of and know about? To me, it was kind of stepping outside of that echo chamber where we're always, you know, talking to ourselves or talking about the same topics. I've never forgotten that presentation. So I wanted to recreate that experience. And of course, at HBR, we have the perfect types of folks to do this. So I approached Nick Quill to come on board because obviously that's his world, that's his space, law firm leaders. He's talking with so many folks about, you know, what keeps them up at night. So it's really that type of a program. And then we brought in Bobby because she is really firmly in that innovation space. She is working again with the CINOs and others to address innovation and getting that perspective and then allowing you and Marlene, I think it's you're going to be the last session of the day, and really take a lot of that and maybe apply it to the information space or help attendees or others kind of think about, what does that mean? How can we utilize that information to make decisions or to work with our own leadership in our firms? And that's really the goal. It's not to have them telling us, you know, what we should do or shouldn't do. I think we've got that down and we can do that ourselves. It's really providing that view that we often don't get to. And I think what we put in the materials is, you know, ever wanted to be at the table, you know, here's your opportunity to hear exactly what's being said to those folks.
Yeah. And we've used the saying around here a lot of if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So
exactly.
It's better to be at the table. So.
That's right.
And I know the second session, you're going to be highlighting the 2021 Bliss survey.
Yep.
For those that don't know what the Bliss survey is, can you give us a quick explainer on that one?
Yeah. So HBR has been doing for about 5 years a survey in the information library law firm space. 3 years ago or so, we shifted the focus a little bit to benchmarking. So it's the benchmarking, which is where the Bliss comes from, Legal Information Services Survey, and really wanted to focus on consistency. So asking the same questions year over year. Also different benchmarks that could be applied. This is our biggest year that we've had. 2021, we had the most responses and survey input. And that is sort of another impetus for the links. We typically do a webinar around the Bliss results, kind of give a sneak peek, and thought we'd just wrap it into this conference. And we're really excited about Bliss this year. You know, people might not know, we deliver the results via an interactive dashboard that was custom made for HBR by our group here internally. It allows the users to do segmentation. So one of the gaps with a lot of the surveys that are on the market, especially in the law firm, there's such a big difference between the MLaw 1 to 25 and, you know, so on down the line. Yeah. And so applying the survey results kind of across the board is just not very useful to folks. So we do allow that segmentation. And then one of the things that'll be new this year is a lot of trending. We built the dashboard last year, so that occupied all our time. So then this year really did a deep dive into the 5 years worth. So where we could, with the questions, do the trending. So hopefully, you know, there's a lot of topics that people are really interested in around budgets, sole provider, staffing. And then part of our hot topic, we do a hot topic each year. And this year's hot topic is around succession planning, which has become
very hot.
Quite the issue. Yeah. And so we've got the CTO from Perkins, Jennifer Bluestein, joining us. And she's going to be talking about some best practices. And I'm really excited about that because I think that's, you know, as you said, it's kind of a pretty big topic at the moment.
Yeah. And I think with all of the stuff that's been going on the last year and a half, 2 years, the succession planning has got to rise up to the top of a lot of people's concerns. especially as we try to figure out what's next as far as how we work going forward. So, yeah, it's so you got Jessica King and Jennifer Bluestein from Perkins Coie, and Cynthia Brown from Littler is going to be there as well. And then you know, to wrap it all up, Marlene and I are going to kind of like do a synopsis of what we heard, and then interact with the people in the audience. So, and then after Marlene and I talk, then we just do a little bit of a social interaction.
One of the things too that we wanted to use a newfangled platform or something other than Zoom.
Yeah.
And so we're using AirMeet, which does provide a lot of actual true networking experiences. So it actually looks like little tables. You can go to a table. We'll have different sizes of tables. So two people or four people or whatever, you can hop in and hop out. There's even speed networking. So if you like speed dating and you want to be paired up with someone for a few minutes to have a quick conversation and then rotate around, we'll probably have that enabled as well. And that part is just optional, and we hope people want to stick around or just chat with friends or meet new people. I'm happy to provide the platform and excited about those possibilities if we can emulate some of that in-person, more casual gathering. That would be great.
All right. Well, I'll put a link to all of the information on how to register, time and place, cost on this, and I think there's a little something special with the cost as well.
Yep. So it's $45, or if you participated in Bliss, it's only $35. And the proceeds will be going to benefit the AALL George A. Strait Minority Scholarship and Fellowship Fund. So we're happy to be able to support and give back. And we have, I believe, almost 70 attendees at the moment.
Right.
Those are paid attendees, not just
that doesn't include me then.
It does not include you. That's right.
Great. Well, Colleen, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us and tell us more about the Lynx Conference.
Excellent. Thank you. We hope to see all of you there.
We would like to welcome Brad Blickstein and Beatrice Cerebello, partners and co-heads of Barrett's and... We would like to welcome Brad Blickstein and Beatrice Cerebello, partners and co-heads of Barrett's and Brunel's new law practice group. Brad and Beatrice, welcome to the Geek and Review.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Marlene.
Thank you for having us.
So we brought you both on the show to talk about the new survey you've conducted, which asks AmLaw 200 and Global 100 law firms about the technology they're building and the adoption rates in which attorneys are actually using the new tools. But before we get to that, can I get you first to talk about what are you doing with your new law practice and what objectives are there for your team there at B&B?
So as we all know, and I know this is a common topic on the podcast, the legal industry is evolving, and that increasingly means new legal service delivery models. We've shortened, for the name of our practice, new legal service delivery models to new law. That just means different ways that law firms and others are providing legal services. So it might be from within a law firm, but differently than the standard, you know, associates do the lion's share of the work and partners look it over. And it might be by an ALSP, or it might be from an offshore LPO, or it might apply technology or process. But all of these non-traditional methods of legal service delivery is what we are all about. And our practice is really helping law firms and others build those tools, gain adoption of those tools, and bring them to market.
Brad and Beatrice, you have cleverly shaped the survey that you've done around the great American baseball movie, Field of Dreams. And I just want to read the introduction that you wrote for the survey itself, the results. On the surface, Field of Dreams is about baseball. Some say it's the best baseball movie ever made. Those who agree understand it's really a movie that transcends the game. It's about instinct, it's about faith, it's about ambition, and it's about family. But perhaps most importantly, it's about the wonderful and mystical things that can happen to those who relentlessly pursue their dreams. So how does this relate to what large law firms are doing around the world when it comes to developing technology and innovation within their organizations?
The field of dreams comparison was quite obvious to the both of us in all of the working that we've done with law firms. The fact remains that law firms have invested a great deal in building great teams, in investing in technology. On the surface, they're responding to the client demand, but they've built these things, including incredibly talented teams who are actually building great things, but most of that which is being built is never utilized. So it occurred to Brad and I that, oh my, they're building it with the expectation that that's all it takes. But in fact, it takes a lot more.
So you start off with a big issue. You know, law firms know that they need to do something to respond to the increasing pressures brought to them by demands from clients for efficiencies and competition from alternative legal service providers. Law firms were contemplating building tools to help improve efficiencies and have an advantage over the competition. Somewhere in the halls of the offices, they heard a voice.
If you build it, he will come.
What motivated you to draw this parallel between Iowa farmer Ray Kinsella and big law firm partners hearing that voice calling them to action?
Yes, so largely it's not the big law firm partners who hear that voice. It's the people in charge of developing and building and gaining adoption for innovation initiatives, or what we call new law initiatives, within the firms. And it's how B said it is really right. The belief was, if you build it, they will come. That if you build this cool tool, all that has to happen is your lawyers will see how cool it is, whether it's a tool or a process or whatever, and they will come and use that tool. But then as we built our practice over the past couple of years, what we learned is that, just like some of the characters in the movie, you know, it's really questionable whether or not they will come. In many cases, they do not come.
And I would add that there is some whispering going on to law firm leadership because they know they have to do something. So they hear it, but they don't know how to materialize it. So that's the whisper. It's like there is something in their head that is telling them they must do this, but there's not enough to be able to make what they're doing materialize.
Just to try and clarify that a little bit, who's doing the whispering?
Very good question. So I think the whispering, it comes from a lot of different sources, right? The whispering comes from the clients. We hear from clients all the time that they want to see things being done differently. They want law to be practiced differently. Lawyers have in fact responded by investing in teams that are different than the teams we've normally seen in firms. And these people have great ideas, and they actually have been brought on board to develop new ideas. And then there's somewhat of a breakdown from there. So I think the whispering is both in the ears of lawyers as well as from the people who are on the ground trying to get things done.
Yeah, it comes from clients. It comes from the innovation teams themselves. It comes from maybe if you have if sometimes firm leadership is really forward thinking, even when the firm itself isn't necessarily always forward thinking. Greg, it comes from you and Marlene, right? Like, I mean, your every episode of the podcast is a whisper.
If you listen to the podcast, they will come.
Exactly. Well, will they?
That's what we tell them. That's what we tell them. We can't be wrong, right?
Right.
Now, there's a couple of things that I think of when it comes to law firms developing their own technology and innovation processes. And again, you said it doesn't have to be a technology. It could be innovation in other ways. You know, the first is that while they may know they need to do something, they typically aren't set up to be a development shop. They're not typically set up to be change agents. They do very well at what they do. And so they may hear the voice saying to build something, but typically I would say the reply you hear a lot comes from the movie, and that is,
"All right, that's it, huh? Who are you, huh? What do you want from me?"
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is the classic question that is how law firm partners and lawyers kind of view this stuff in a lot of ways. Like, you know, they've heard the whispers. I think I would say almost every partner we've ever talked to at a law firm sort of has some belief that they should be doing something differently, that these innovation teams at their firms are onto something sort of on, you know, very few of them just fully reject that out of hand. Where there's a big disconnect is around exactly what the quote is. Like, you know, what do you want from me? Like, you know, I have some, you know, we should definitely practice a lot different, but I'm not me. Like, yeah. I don't want to, I think that's a really funny quote. It's really a good one. And despite all that, you know, firms are trying a whole bunch of different things.
For the firms that make this decision that they want to change things, and you can kind of point to a handful of firms who are first movers in these types of prospects. So they've, you know, plowed their traditional legal operations crops under, and now they're building something new. So what is it that they're aspiring to build?
So what are they harvesting?
Yeah, what are they planting?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there are new legal delivery service models. It's either using technology. It is looking at the staffing models for law. It is looking at processes. It's truncating the practices in such a way that lawyers get to concentrate on practicing law. And the things that they don't need to be involved in are being actually taken care of in other ways. And ultimately, the client gets a much better experience.
We asked about 10 different initiatives. But, you know, they range from tech-enabled document drafting to data analysis to self-service models, all the way down to use of blockchain. So there's a bunch of different... We really try to look at specific initiatives that firms are trying. And what we learned is that they're trying a lot of them. I mean, we asked about 10 different initiatives, and I believe 80% of our respondent pool has tried at least half of the initiatives that we're asking about. So if the overall construct here is, if you build it, will they come? They're building it.
Right. And they're trying, and trying is the word. Trying might not be adopting. Trying is trying.
Yeah. So speaking of trying, so in the process of trying to build something, you know, did you find the partners at firms saying,
Ray, this is a very non-specific voice you have out there, and he's starting to piss me off.
Or were they saying,
but I also think if you really feel you should do this, you should do it.
I love that part because there's a soft music going on.
Super touching.
I think it's probably some of both. And, you know, I'll mix my metaphors here and use an aside. Years ago, I went to a Simon and Garfunkel concert, and, you know, they don't get along. But they get along well enough to have their patter on stage every 15 years or so and collect a bunch of money from people like me. So they're on stage, and Garfunkel says, you know, I think the whole problem in our relationship the whole time is that I always thought we should call it Garfunkel and Simon. And Paul says brilliantly in my mind, these brilliant four words, you should do that. And I feel like that's the reaction of partners, I think, in a lot of cases, which is, you know, oh, we should innovate. We should do all this stuff. It would be great. And, you know, yes, you should do that. And I'm going to sit here and continue to review these documents one by one. And I think so there's a disconnect between what the firm thinks and what the partners sort of think and, you know, who exactly should do this. And that ties into the first quote in your little series, which is this non-specific voice.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is that what we see a lot is a willingness to embrace innovation as long as it doesn't touch their practice and that it's good for them, but not necessarily for me. Or our practice is very prestigious and we don't do that kind of thing. But what we really know is that there is no practice that cannot use some improvement. And what I think we're trying to accomplish with this report is to say, yeah, you raised your hand, you've gone out there, you purchased the products or you built the products, but now the rubber meets the road. Are you going to do it or not?
If you want to go out and call yourself Garfunkel and Simon, I'm not going to stop you. But that doesn't mean I'm doing it.
Exactly.
So, and I know that you address it in the survey, but we hear these anecdotal stories about how lawyer adoption of new technology just leaves a lot to be desired.
Hey, is this heaven?
No, it's Iowa.
This is my favorite quote. So what this quote means for us, for this report, is that lawyers have not accepted that all of this cannot be done without their involvement. They're expecting a magic wand to come into their practice and that they're not going to have to do the tough stuff. And so is this heaven, meaning is this going to be some magic, or is this Iowa day to day, feet on the ground, held to the fire, doing the work? So what we've come to realize is two things. One is that lawyers do not have the time to be involved in building product or in thinking about new processes or in thinking about different staffing models, nor are they incentivized to do it. So those are two pieces that are really broken. And the truth of the matter is what we've also seen is when the professionals who have the roles, the responsibility of innovation in law firms, when they build things on their own, then lawyers say, well, how could they have built something on their own? They don't know anything about the practice of law. So there's a yin and a yang there, right? And it really does take a tenacity from the lawyers to get this stuff done. And the incentives around driving that need to also be in play in a firm.
And Greg, you had mentioned sort of this conventional wisdom that adoption is difficult. And that really gets to the heart of what we were trying to do with this report, was to try to put some data around what we all believe. And we did that by creating a maturity model around the adoption of new law initiatives within a firm. It's a 5-point scale. One is an effort that's stuck in the innovation team or the innovation committee. Two would be some lawyers are using the thing. Three would be some legal teams or practice groups are delivering service using the initiative. Four is most of the legal teams are delivering. And five is the initiative is completely pervasive through the firm. And we did this for all 10 of the initiatives that we tested for. And you know, please download the report, check it out, see them all. But you know, generally what we learned is that mostly twos and threes, you know, that most of these things are inching along the adoption curve, but far from fully pervasive throughout the law firm. That's generally not happening, at least not yet.
Did you find anything in your research of this that kind of counters that common thread of lawyers are really difficult to adopt a new technology, or did it depend?
Well, I would say that there are visionaries in legal. There are lawyers who are operating really in a very interesting and creative way. So it's not that there is no lawyer out there that can do this stuff. I would say that they're few and far between. I think that what we, you know, traditionally see is lawyers, you know, who have for many, many years practiced in a certain way and are not being incentivized to look at things differently. They have a good client base. They have their, you know, team supporting them. What's the problem? You know, I'm bringing in my revenue. I come to work. I work hard. Why do I have to do anything differently? So, and then, you know, we come across other lawyers who, you know, really bang it out of the park and who have this vision and want to continue growing and changing and moving. But I must say that there are fewer of them that we've witnessed than the others.
But, you know, I imagine there were some firms that saw some type of positive results from these experiments, or were they saying to themselves,
I have just created something totally illogical.
That's my favorite.
When you innovate, sometimes you do end up creating something totally illogical. And that's what being innovative is about, right? So you have to be prepared to pivot and change. And that might be a quality that you don't usually find in law firms, that ability to sort of bite something off, to be a little risk-taking in developing something. I think that both Brad and I would say that there are some really great law firms doing really interesting stuff, but they're not in the majority.
We did include two case studies right in the report on firms that are doing very interesting things with pervasive adoption. One is Porzio, Bromberg and Newman, which is sort of a New Jersey-based pharmaceutical firm that has created a subsidiary, an affiliated entity, which grew out of really a client-facing database around pharmaceutical compliance. And that is fully pervasive throughout the firm and fully symbiotic with the firm. So it leads to other business for the firm and brings in clients on its own. And then the other case study that we included was around Saifarth Shaw and their Caribou product or offering, which, you know, Saifarth Shaw is interesting. Really, the two case studies are a bit of a contrast because Porzio sort of saw an opportunity, this is a few years ago, and sort of caught lightning in a bottle and sort of brilliantly developed something that really changed their whole firm. You know, Saifarth has innovation really in their DNA more than most firms do. So it's a really good example of what happens when you for years, work to convince your partners that innovation, that new thinking, that different processes, that process itself is the way to go. And that makes anything much more adoptable. And I think one of the gentlemen or one of the lawyers from Saifarth that we interviewed said, pointed out, and I think it's really true, everything is a process. And, you know, it might have 100 steps or it might have 2 steps, but everything is a process. And as soon as you realize that, the idea of applying more process and also technology to the legal function starts to make a lot more sense.
I know, and I speak for, I think, most fans of Field of Dreams, that we were happy that there was not a sequel to that movie, that there was no Field of Dreams 2. Your report, on the other hand, will actually have a sequel. And in this one, you're going to talk about another part of the movie where this mysterious voice in the cornfield says,
"Go the distance."
So
that's right.
In this going the distance, what are you going to be covering in this topic?
So in part one, we talked about what law firms are trying and the extent to which they are gaining adoption. If you build it, will they come? Or if you build it, to what extent are they coming? In part two, we take a look at the firms that have been more successful in driving adoption and look at the attributes that they have that help them drive adoption. We call them effective adoption attributes. And we compare the firms that are better at this with the rest of the firms. And we talk about what it is that those firms are doing that makes them better at this. So if you remember the end of the movie, the very end is a scene where you can see cars driving down a road heading to this baseball field nirvana. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here is help draw that roadmap to, I guess, take you from Iowa to heaven.
And I think that go the distance also means that you might have tried something and you might not have really been successful, but that doesn't really mean that you should drop it. That means you can re-engage in different ways. And as Brad said, this is a roadmap for that. So go the distance means don't be discouraged. These things are not easy. This is all about change. And going the distance means these are the things you can apply to be more successful in what you're doing.
All right. Well, Brad Blickstein and Beatrice Cervello, I'm going to borrow another saying from a baseball great, and that's the great Ernie Banks, and say, let's play two, and you guys come back when you have your second report ready.
Thank you both for coming on and sharing the results.
Great. Yes. Thank you. We look forward to it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, and we absolutely look forward to being back in a month or so.
And thanks for putting up with the quotes.
We love that.
That was the best part.
It was fun, one, doing the voice. I got to test out the soundboard and some of the clips from the movie. Really interesting way to tackle the problem of adoption of innovation in law firms.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think sort of couching it in this way makes it sort of really approachable and dare I say, entertaining. And that's kind of what you need to sort of get your audience. You know, there's a lot of reports out there, and this one will certainly catch your eye.
And in true Geek and Review fashion, it's free.
It's free and heavy on the data.
So thanks again to Brad Blickstein and to Beatrice Saravello from B&B for coming in and talking to us about a report. We will see them soon, I think, with part two.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to the Geek and Review podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found at GabeBauerM on Twitter.
And I can be reached at Glambert on Twitter.
Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Geek and Review hotline at 713-487-7270. And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, Marlene, I will talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.